Alaska News Nightly is made possible by APRN member stations, by National Bank of Alaska for convenience in banking, and by Mark Air and Mark Air Express.
From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly. President Bush today announced increased federal involvement in the Exxon oil spill cleanup, making everyone happier but leaving people on the front lines wondering just what that federal support will amount to and when they'll see it. Good evening, I'm Corey Flintoff. Also tonight, the focus of attention is shifting to the southwest, where Kodiak is bracing for oil that may be less than 10 miles away. Calling the Exxon Valdez oil spill a tragic environmental disaster, President George Bush today announced a greater federal role in the cleanup, promising stepped-up aid from the military and federal agencies. In doing so, he repeatedly stressed Exxon's liability for the damages and the imperative for a total cleanup.
Our ultimate goal must be the complete restoration of the ecology and the economy of Prince William Sound, including all of its fish, marine mammals, birds, and other wildlife. The Exxon Corporation has acknowledged responsibility for this spill and its liability for the damages. Exxon should remain responsible for both damages and for employing civilian personnel necessary to control further damage. However, Exxon's efforts, standing alone, are not enough. And after consulting with the congressional delegation, Senator Ted Stevens, Senator Frank Murkowski, Congressman Don Young, I have determined to add additional federal resources to the cleanup effort, in addition to the considerable federal personnel and equipment already on the scene. And this new effort will focus on the job of helping recover oil now in the water and restoring beaches and other damaged areas. This effort should not in any way relieve Exxon from any of its responsibilities or its liabilities.
The president said he's sending Admiral Paul Yost, the commandant of the Coast Guard, back to Alaska to assume personal oversight of the cleanup operation.
Also at my direction, Defense Secretary Dick Cheney will make available U.S. Armed Forces personnel and equipment to assist in the cleanup. The military will provide personnel for direct cleanup activities, as well as assisting with logistics, the needs of logistics related to the cleanup.
Bush also said that he's calling on EPA Administrator William Riley to take charge of long-range planning to restore the environment of the Sound, including the development of programs for using volunteer workers. The president said a loan program will be developed to help mitigate the economic damages to Alaskans and added that he's encouraged Exxon to step up its local hire for the cleanup. Noting that the Exxon spill demonstrated the inadequacy of existing contingency plans, Bush said he's ordered a review of all such plans nationwide. During the question and answer session with reporters, the president maintained his support for oil development and especially for exploration in Anwar. The Alaska Congressional delegation met with reporters in Washington Day following President Bush's nationally televised announcement on the administration's stepped-up role in the cleanup. Washington correspondent Matt Kay has the story.
The delegation said it had gotten most of what it wanted from the administration, short of an emergency declaration by the president. That could still come later, but with the military now involved, the delegation agrees not much more can be accomplished if Bush declares an emergency. Senator Frank Murkowski.
The fact that we have the military participation of the Air Force, the National Guard, under the auspices of the Coast Guard is appropriate, and the ability now to mobilize Alaskans, mobilize volunteers, bring our native firefighters down, people who want to become involved in the actual mopping up exercise.
But amid the satisfaction over Washington's expanded role in the cleanup, there is still uncertainty over the full extent of Exxon's financial liability. Exxon officials testified before Congress this week they are responsible for all reasonable costs of the cleanup. But Murkowski argued Exxon's liability could extend further than the company wants to admit.
There's almost $300 million in the pipeline liability fund, of which there is a provision that up to $100 million can be drawn per incident. But that's no ironclad requirement. There's reason to believe that they can go beyond that. We happen to know that Exxon has $400 million in a pool for cleanup. Those are identifiable amounts that you can look on before you look to Exxon itself.
And Senator Ted Stevens says flatly Exxon's liability is unlimited. But he admits White House lawyers are still looking at the liability question, which could also impact on whether the president ever declares an emergency. Such an action could limit Exxon's financial obligations, which neither the delegation or the administration wants to see. And then there's the political price to be paid for the Exxon Valdez disaster. The president told reporters, you don't stop offshore oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico because of human error causing a tanker spill in Prince William Sound. Congressman Don Young was asked whether Bush's remark will heighten the debate over development proposals for ANWR.
The critics against ANWR are not new. They just had a better platform. In fact, some of them actually relished this disaster and actually conveyed that information and that type of conduct and that attitude, which does not surprise me. But yesterday in our House hearing, we had 42 members there. Only two of the total House shut their eyes to the need of developing ANWR.
Young says the oil spill has actually increased understanding in Congress of the need for development. Says members now know what just a 15-day disruption does to the flow of Alaskan oil to the lower 48. It has brought home the extent of Alaska's oil contribution, 25% of all U.S. needs. But the oil spill has also strained political relationships at a time when cooperation is needed. Stevens blew up when told that Valdez Mayor John Devens complained Bush's announcement shows if Alaskan fishermen want relief from the administration, they should join the Army.
This is not politics. For someone to say that, I think, is really damaging what we're trying to do. And I hope he comes to see me. As a matter of fact, he's complained I didn't go to see him when I was Valdez. He thought I had to go to his office rather than go out and see the spill. I'm not going to put up with petty politicians in this effort.
Senator Murkowski, trying to calm tempers, argued the delegation is attempting to get the word out that help is available, including low-interest, long-term small business loans for fishermen, and that Bush is acting in good faith. He urged the name-calling and finger-pointing end, and that everyone start to pick up the pieces after a terrible tragedy. For Alaska Public Radio, this is Matt Kay in Washington, D.C.
Governor Cooper was in Juneau, homesick with the flu, when the president made his announcement. The governor said military equipment may be the most valuable asset the federal government can offer right now. Later, the troops can hit the beaches. John Greeley spoke with the governor this afternoon.
That's an even better response than we had expected, to tell you the truth.
Cooper asked for the Coast Guard to step in on Wednesday. Late yesterday, he says Transportation Secretary Samuel Skinner called to tell him that the president was mobilizing the military and sending Admiral Paul Yost of the Coast Guard to Alaska to oversee the stepped-up effort personally.
I think that Admiral Yost's presence on the scene is going to make a lot of difference in this.
The governor says he was also encouraged by Bush's statement that any military used in the cleanup of Prince William Sound would not displace Alaska workers.
We also have firefighting crews who are available and accustomed to living out in the bush and accustomed to working together on disasters. They are at the ready, and I would certainly want to deploy those firefighters before we go to the military.
But before anybody hits the beaches, be they Alaska firefighters, U.S. military, or civilian volunteers, Cooper says the main problem is retrieving oil from the water, and that process is going painfully slow. Earlier this week, two cleanup officials were dispatched to Tokyo to examine a big Soviet oil cleanup vessel that may be able to reach large patches of crude thought to be submerged to depths of 90 feet under the surface of the water.
We wanted to send both those gentlemen to Tokyo and then have the Soviets come and pick them up in Tokyo and bring them to Sakhalin Island. But Sakhalin Island is a big military installation for the Soviets. They probably are a little nervous about any Americans getting there. And so they wanted both these men to go to Moscow first, which takes another day or two out of their schedule, means that the vessel ultimately will be deployed a couple of days later than before. It will take 9 to 14 days for the vessel to get from Sakhalin Island to Prince William Sound in any event. But I can tell you the oil is still going to be there.
And Cooper himself is housebound these days, hit with the worst case of the flu he said he's seen in 10 years. On the 19th of April, though, the governor said he plans to travel to Washington for a congressional hearing on oil tanker safety legislation. In Juneau, I'm John Greeley.
On the front lines of the cleanup effort in Prince William Sound, reaction to the president's announcement that he's sending the troops in has been largely one of surprise and confusion. Peter Kenyon reports from Valdez.
The state's top man in Valdez, DEC Commissioner Denny Kelso, says the details of the federal assistance are few and far between at this point, but the state's efforts are moving ahead unchanged.
We don't intend for the announcement that military personnel will be available here to change our momentum at all. We're going to keep our focus. We're going to keep working with local people. We don't know how long it will take for the military staff that the president referred to arrive or to do their assessment, but we're not going to sit back. We're going to continue our work.
According to Coast Guard spokesperson Rick Might, that initial assessment is already underway. Might says General Thomas McInerney arrived from Elmendorf Air Force Base Friday morning to meet with Coast Guard Admiral Nelson and determine what's needed and what can be delivered. Other than that, details are sketchy. Might says it could be as a few days before any hardware or personnel actually arrives in Prince William Sound, and he cautions that this is a tricky situation. You can't just tell the troops to walk out there and start scrubbing rocks, he says, because you don't want a sudden influx of people to harm the sound's ecology any more than it already has been. Exxon officials spent much of Friday morning denying that the president's announcement amounted to a condemnation of the company's cleanup efforts so far. Spokesperson Don Cornett told reporters that Exxon has always worked closely with the Coast Guard, and he doesn't think this is a significant change. Meanwhile, rumors flashed through Valdez Friday afternoon that cleanup workers were being laid off because the military was coming in to take the jobs away. That proved not to be the case. DEC's spill response coordinator Jim Hayden says it's true some people have been let go, but not because of the troops.
We aren't hiring at the moment because we don't have the management personnel. And, in fact, we have released about a dozen individuals from the ferry Aurora, which we have out at Sawmill Bay, because we have found that 60 on board is just too many to handle. We're running out of supplies and water too quickly. So we've cut that back to about 35 to 40.
President Bush's statement declared that the troops would not displace any civilian workers, but some of the people here are skeptical. For APRN in Valdez, I'm Peter Kenyon.
As the oil spill spreads into the Gulf of Alaska, the resources to fight it are being sent to Seward, Kodiak, and other threatened communities. From Valdez, Claire Richardson reports on the emergency plans and on an agreement for funding the oil spill defense.
The Battle of Sawmill Bay continues, with heavy Navy sea boom being placed as a fifth line of defense to keep San Juan Salmon Hatchery oil-free. While efforts remain focused on the hatcheries, the Department of Environmental Conservation and Exxon have sent key people to other communities such as Seward, whose front yard, Resurrection Bay, is threatened. DEC's Gary Hayden helped design the emergency team response for those communities.
We have executed sort of memorandums of agreements with Cordova, Kenai Peninsula Borough that will be acting for Seward and possibly those along the coast. And then we also have an agreement with, signed agreement with Kodiak. And those agreements define that the state will assist the communities in reimbursement of their expenses in response mechanisms. And like Commissioner said, we'll be sending technical people there also to talk about oil spill response. And the governor's office has dispatched personnel also to those places. And Fish and Game has been activated in Kodiak also.
Exxon has also begun to deploy boom and other resources to the threatened areas. Exxon Shipping President Frank Iarossi.
We've deployed over 160,000 feet of boom, and we have an additional 120,000 feet en route to Alaska. 30,000 feet of that boom is moving westward to the Seward area, Homer area, and Kodiak. We have a total of 29 skimmers that are either in operation or being deployed from Valdez. We have five others that are being moved westward towards Seward. There's one in Seward, two going to Homer, and two going to Kodiak. So we're beginning to move our resources westward to counter the potential threat from the oil that's in the Gulf of Alaska.
But even with the active involvement of the communities and state and federal officials, DEC Commissioner Dennis Kelso says realistically the defense measures in place won't protect the coastline from a strong southeasterly wind.
If there are strong onshore winds for a sustained period of time, we would expect, again, significant impacts. It depends to some extent on what form the oil is in if it contacts the shore, and it depends on which areas have defensive protection and how effective that is. So obviously we can't give you a specific answer, but there's no way that that full curve of coastline on the Gulf of Alaska can be adequately protected.
According to Lynn Crystal with the National Weather Service in Valdez, a southeasterly onshore wind is forecast for the weekend. This could affect the areas from Kodiak to southern Prince William Sound. But Crystal adds the winds should be light, and the winds should revert to a northerly offshore direction by early Monday. In Valdez, I'm Claire Richardson.
The main body of oil resulting from the Exxon spill remains just south of Gore Point. The Coast Guard says patches of oil are 30 miles northeast of Kodiak's Marmot Island, but unofficial reports place oil patches as close as 10 miles. Lainey Welsh reports.
In anticipation of the approaching oil slick, Kodiak Islanders crowded into the high school auditorium again today for the third round of emergency preparedness meetings. With latest Coast Guard surveillance flights indicating an oil sheen nearing Marmot Island, boats, crews, containment, and cleanup gear are ready to go. Marmot Island, located near the northeast tip of Kodiak, is the home of Alaska's largest sea lion rookery. It's also close to some of Kodiak's more critical herring stocks. Jeff Stephen, manager of the United Fishermen's Marketing Association, is organizing boat owners and crews for the cleanup operations.
We need vessels to be ready on immediate notice. That means fuel, groceries, skiffs, extra shots of crab line, gas cans, maybe several crab pots on board, anchors if you have them, throw on as much as you can. Vessels should be immediately ready to go support the 4 to 7 vessels that are leaving today. If the oil goes to them, we'll need to put more vessels with them. If the oil goes somewhere else, we'll need to send vessels to the areas where the oil goes. We may also need to relieve those vessels that have been out for some time. We cannot depend on a few. We should all be ready to rotate. With good luck, we won't see any of this. Please remember that we won't know for several weeks, however. Once again, please commit yourself to this effort. Please be ready to go.
Boats are ready to go, but many loose ends still need to be taken care of. Exxon has promised to assume all liability coverage for vessels and crews and to provide charter contracts for boat owners. And they've promised to set up boat cleaning stations. But so far, people have received no written confirmation, nor have they been able to talk with anyone from Exxon. Yesterday, four Exxon representatives met with city officials, but then they left Kodiak immediately. Fishermen like Dave Hernstein expressed frustration at the lack of input and availability of Exxon's people.
You got to know what you're going to be paying your crews. You got to know what kind of rate you're getting. And apparently they had a list and took it with them. And I think it's very specific information that needs to be known. If they're trying to talk with us as businessmen as well as fishermen, we need to have them stick around long enough to talk about. We're in the habit of making contracts with canneries and all other kind of entities, but you got to know some figures. You got to know what's going on. And I think for them to just come into town and jump ship and take off is not responsible.
Exxon says they'll have a company representative stationed on Kodiak Island as of today. Islanders feel they're running out of time, and they won't wait around for Exxon to make good on stated commitments. City Mayor Bob Brody sums up the feeling of this island community.
We're not depending on Exxon, we're depending on ourselves.
Reporting from Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Birds and animals outside Prince William Sound are beginning to feel the effects of oil. Exxon announced this morning that it's planning to open a rescue center in Seward. It hasn't opened yet. And Ron Smith from the Park Service Response Team says wildlife isn't all Exxon plans to clean.
They've also begun to establish seven cleaning facilities, actually they're calling them decontamination facilities, for vessels traveling through the oil slick, cleaning the oil off the boats when they pass through it. Those are going to be set up in Whittier, Cordova, Valdez, Homer. I'm trying to think of all of them. Of course, here in Seward, and possibly in Kodiak.
Even though oil has surrounded known bird and animal habitats, no animals have been brought into Seward for cleaning yet. But Smith knows there will be.
We're sure that as this thing progresses, we will begin to find birds and mammals, and we want to have a facility ready. We've also been contacted by a variety of people having a desire to volunteer their time and assistance in helping us clean birds and or other animals, probably sea otters, those kinds of animals. So it's been pretty exciting, and when we get these things in place, we'll be extremely grateful.
He cautions that the cleaning facility is not in place yet and asks that potential volunteers please stay tuned to their radios. As soon as there's work to be done in Seward, Ron Smith will let us know. The state of Alaska today ordered the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company to assemble a 12-member oil spill response team to be on duty in Valdez 24 hours a day. The order gives Alyeska 3 days to comply. Otherwise, fines of up to $100,000 could follow. Alyeska already has announced plans to beef up its oil spill readiness in Valdez, but today's order by DEC Commissioner Kelso goes beyond that. By May 15th, the order requires Alyeska to be able to respond to any spills up to 10 million gallons within 2 hours anywhere within Prince William Sound. Alyeska may ask for a public hearing on the state requirements, but Kelso said the order would remain in effect during those hearings. Alyeska has increased the flow of oil in the Trans-Alaska pipeline to its regular output of more than 2 million barrels a day. The flow was cut back to about 800,000 barrels a day after the Exxon spill when the port was closed to tankers. Now, Alyeska spokesman Tom Brennan says about 4 tankers a day are being escorted into port, and the North Slope crude is flowing at full force.
It's a little bit over 2 million barrels a day. It started several days ago, and I think we reached full throughput the day before yesterday. We're still under the restrictions established by the state and the Coast Guard, but we're able to bring in a normal flow of tankers. We have 75 to 80 tankers normally in a month, and even with the amount of daylight we have now, we can get 3 or 4 tankers in a day, so we can actually stay ahead of schedule if necessary.
We reported yesterday that 3 skimmers have remained idle at the oil terminal, but Brennan says that equipment must remain at the dock as part of the current contingency plan, ready for use in case of another spill. The Prince William Sound Conservation Association doesn't support it, but there's a protest brewing on the East Coast. Connecticut State Representative Mike Mayotte is launching a boycott Exxon movement. He's been involved in environmental issues, but he says it's been from a nuts and bolts lawmaking point of view, not protests or boycotts. He isn't known for this sort of action.
The first way this idea came to me was when someone who's been involved with me, a friend of mine, worked in my campaigns in the past, told me that a few days ago he pulled into an Exxon station to get gas, and his wife was in the car with him, and she said, "No way are you buying gas in this station from this company with what happened in Alaska." And we started talking about that. We talked to others. I think there's a lot of sort of pent-up resentment and anger over this.
The target date for the boycott is May 2nd, but Mayotte says that doesn't mean people have to buy gas from Exxon at other times. He claims he's already gotten support from legislators in other states, including New York. When you talk with people about the Exxon disaster, it's striking how many Alaskans have personal attachments to Prince William Sound. For some people, the sound's been the site of their most profound experiences of Alaska. Commentator John Howe spent a month there a couple of years ago. These are some of his observations.
Last night, a week after the wreck of the good ship Exxon Valdez, having successfully navigated the early stages of mourning, anger, denial, guilt, I realized I had entered the final stage when sorrow turns to prayer. So I got out my Prince William Sound journal, and I searched through it for memories of the wild creatures I'd seen there. August 20th, 1986. This morning we took the skiff up a tide channel into an inner salt lagoon with a salmon stream at its head. As we pushed slowly up the channel, a harbor seal streaked by underwater, not rising to look back at us until it was almost around the first bend. The stream was about 30 feet wide and almost solid with salmon, no more than a few inches between any two of them all the way across. Farther up, the forest closed in around white sandbars in deep, purest emerald green pools teeming with fish. From high up on the bank, from deep devil's club and ferns and low, overhanging hemlock boughs came the loud, snorting woof of a bear, then the sound of brush crashing and a glimpse of brown fur moving fast up the mountain. August 27th, Montague Island. Slow drizzle all day. Saw Steller's Jay so wet its blue was soaked too dark to see. Many bedraggled eagles lurking on snags over the water, a fox sparrow, kingfishers, and a sharp-shinned hawk. All day, the eerie squawks and whistles and whirrings of thousands of seabirds, mostly murres and murrelets, floated through the mist across still water dappled by rain. August 29th, Night Island. Killer whale. 42 animals spread out over a half-square mile, two pods traveling together. An extended family? A tribe? I learned last night that each pod in Prince William Sound speaks its own dialect of the killer whale language. September 4th. Early evening in a small cove near Simpson Bay. Golden light glows through the feathers of a gull gliding by close overhead. Salmon leap, fall back with soft smacks on the water, crystal clear water, deepest blue. A cone-shaped avenue of light expands out across the water, flows sparkling toward snow-capped mountains and the setting sun. Floating, asleep on her back, her pup held tightly in her arms, a mother sea otter drifts gently towards us on an incoming tide. September 9th. This morning, from a small rocky island across from Columbia Glacier, we watched an oil tanker slide out of Valdez Narrows. It was one of those scenes Alaskans take pride in. Straight-lined, gleaming, metal, confident 20th-century technology moving through a magnificent Alaska landscape. A fine scene to show anyone who doubts that oil development can happen here. We can drill for oil at the mouth of Bristol Bay. We can explore for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Watching the tanker move so purposefully, so dutifully out to sea, for a brief moment, I believed. I'll admit it, I bought the party line. It can't happen here, not in this perfect place.
The thoughts of Juno writer John Howe. And that's Alaska News Nightly for this Friday, April the 7th. We had reports tonight from John Greeley of KTOO in Juneau, Claire Richardson of KCHU in Valdez, and Lainey Welch of KMXT in Kodiak. Matt Kay was our Washington correspondent. Our commentator was John Howe. APRN's Peter Kenyon reported from Valdez and Sue Burris from Anchorage. Diana Derby is our engineer with production assistance from Larry Yarrow. Our special thanks go out tonight to Dave Hammock, his staff, and volunteers at KCHU in Valdez. I'm Corey Flintoff.